Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, good evening. This is the L.A. Steel Show. L.A. Steel. And tonight we're going to be continuing our discussion from last week, last Thursday night, Atoltic Path. And the book is written by Ken Eagle Feather. And we discussed the teachings of Don Juan Mantis, or Mattis rather, and Carlo Castaneda. Excuse me, I still haven't failed with this allergy here, but again, let me continue. The Atoltic Path is a user's guide to the teaching of Don Juan Mattis, Carlos Castaneda, Meta, and other Toltec seers. And we discussed, I believe, chapter 1 last week. And 2. I'm reluctant to continue on the same, we probably should continue this chapter by chapter, but I discussed the places in time, places in mind, chapter 2 last night, or last time. And, first cycle, second cycle, transition to the, into the Toltec concepts. And this week, I wanted to move into the I don't know if I can get into this whole thing. It's just very, very involved, but I've been trying to dissect this book over the last week, and I found it rather, it's a complex concept of basically finding oneself. But the seer concept basically is evolving out of the Toltec way is the seer. The mark of a seer is the ability to step outside the Toltec world and continue unfolding perception. In a sense, the difference between a Toltec and a seer is the difference between the second and third cycles. In both second and third cycles had seers, and hence they were able to come to terms with the ego and its emanations. But second cycle Toltecs stayed within the system, and seers work with the system long enough to step beyond it. Again, the first cycle is extremely primitive. Second cycle is when man becomes self-obsessed and self-absorbed and seeks power, seeks personal power. And then the third is when he begins to understand the social and civil, if you will, aspects of becoming responsibility, basically, of one's power. In how it should be used. Like I said, both the second and third cycles had seers, hence they were able to come to terms with the ego and its emanations. An ego is when you are able to focus and focused greatly upon the energy to create the, or I should say, to manifest the desire or the thought that you wish to pursue and have manifest. But the seer, and there's a number of steps to this, which I won't get into because it's something that I highly suggest that you get the book, Ken Eagle Feathers, A Toltec Path, and go through it. Now, I'm just reading the basic meanings here that we're trying to get to tonight. I know it's rather difficult to follow what I'm saying and follow these many different avenues that I'm pursuing, but I believe that in the diversity of thought and philosophy here that we are casting onto the water, it leads to the same basic place, just in different paths that take you there. And each person has a different ability to grasp certain paths to enlightenment and awareness. And what we're trying to do with all of these Thursday night and Friday night and so on shows is to capture and encapsulate the concepts and the pathways to enlightenment. And of course, I'm not an expert, and of course, I don't know who really is an expert in this, other than those who have actually achieved enlightenment through their methods. But all we can do, or all I can do, to help my listeners achieve, or and myself, to achieve some enlightenment, is to continue to pursue these avenues until the light comes on or the door opens and we walk through. So that's essentially all I can do. I was getting back to this. Remaining locked within a system keeps people locked within themselves, and enhancing the self and reducing awareness. So Don Juan said that the second cycle's forays into the unknowable were governed by greed and self-importance, producing marked changes in their in their energy bodies. Rather than maintaining human-shaped energy, they became something altogether different than the human condition. Don Juan said that while he admires the immensity of their thinking, he detests their morbidity. Well, the second cycle achieved remarkable journeys into arenas outside ordinary human perception. They thought the unknowable could be reduced to the known. And to save the day, third cycle innovations orient the seer to the unknowable's purely abstract qualities. Viewing the unknowable as an abstract force places the unknowable into a realm of total mystery. And this serves to keep perception open and flexible. So, in other words, there's so much, and there's so much that we do not know. And man can become quite arrogant and intolerable to new ideas because he likes thinking that he knows everything. And unfortunately, he gets quite surprised when he realizes he doesn't. And he starts to search for other paths and answers. The Earth's boost and the death defiers. Don Juan advised Castaneda not to confuse the world with what people do. For Don Juan, the world consists of dimensions within dimensions and holds unimaginable opportunities. When he guided Castaneda to perceive himself as a crow, for instance, he showed that human awareness was only one option available to us. He also teaches that constant and varied manipulation of the focal point enhances awareness of the other life forms, including Earth. He indicates that as one progresses, a Toltec's relation to Earth automatically becomes more exquisite and intimate. Toltecs can connect points within personal awareness to Earth. This alignment grants additional power to enter other universes. By aligning intent with other emanations, and then hooking into Earth's vital energy, Don Juan maintains that you can propel your complete awareness into realms beyond normal life and death. He thinks that seers at this level, the death defiers, have the ability to die only when they want. And Don Juan also regards seers with third cycle orientations as the quintessential death defiers. To him, they seek true freedom rather than elaborate and bizarre flirtations with the unknown. They seek liberation through the fire from within. And the fire from within. Don Juan's impeccable control of his focal point gave him some very non-ordinary options. If confronted with imminent danger, for example, he saw he can move his focal point and thereby, in the twinkle of an eye, place his physical body in another location. He also says he can choose to burn with the fire from within, and either action removes him from the danger. According to Don Juan, the fire from within produces total awareness, hence total freedom. It occurs when one deliberately stretches awareness across the entire energy body. Tracking and dreaming enable you to engage, explore, and energize different regions of energy body. Sufficient stimulation enables a stretch of awareness throughout the entire energy body. Don Juan says that the physical body then evaporates from the world, and yet a form of individual awareness remains. To provide another reference, the fire from within occurs when the first and second fields unite as one. The limitations of the first field give way to the second field and to the total energy body. Yet the influence of the first field permits the individual sense of self to remain. Awareness is then propelled into the third field, and the abstract qualities of the unknowable become concrete. Don Juan thought the only requirement to obtain total freedom was having the sufficient energy, and he taught the Toltec way as a means to harness that energy. The next chapter is called the Toltec Team. Over the years, I have associated the Toltecs scattered about the United States, Mexico, Canada, and Europe. They consist of men and women, with some of each gender oriented to tracking and to dreaming. Diverse in ages, preferences, tastes, styles, backgrounds, and abilities, their common bond is an unrelenting quest for freedom. As such, they reflect the personalities of a Nagual's party, as outlined in chapters 9 and 10 of Castaneda's book, The Eagle's Gift. The profile of a Nagual party referred to as a Toltec team is an aspect of the rule. Toltecs use the rule as energy for stability and growth, not for mindless adherence. Thus, there can be individual interpretations within its overall scope. Plus, not every team need mirror another. There is plenty of room for variation. while implementing the overall theme. The guiding light is for each member to deal with that, with what actually unfolds, rather than forcing compliance with preconceived notions. In turn, each team must find its own way. Pressures and requirements change with time and locale. And while guided by the rule, this chapter then is based on my observations of and my interactions with these people. And I'm going to mention this, but I think I should go back and preference what he means by the rule. Among the Eagle's command is the rule. The rule is the intent, the consolidating energy, the dream of the Toltec way. Used as a map, the rule accounts for all facets of the Toltec world. It provides guidance for worldview techniques and even the personalities of the practitioners. Toltec's increasing awareness of this emanation accounts for the evolution of cycles. Emilito, another of Abelard's mentors, says the rule is vital in that it prevents one from becoming arbitrary or whimsical. In other words, learning to shift the focal point automatically provides numerous options. Thus, it is easy to get lost exploring the unknown. Preventing this is another reason that modern seers possess unyielding resolve for staying on track to freedom. The rule provides a map to do so. Excuse me. Just as different highway maps are produced by different companies, so do metaphysical traditions offer different directions. Each system has its own rule, its own way of relating to the cosmos. Each rule provides the logic, the building blocks of the knowledgeable, that maps out the specific tradition. Each map points out what to look for, how to get from point A to point B. Saturating oneself in a system's energies constricts awareness in one way, yet offers freedom in another. By focusing your awareness on what you deem essential, you screen out perceptions. But by following a well-drawn map, you get to where you want to go. The rule has core abstractions, abstract because they deal with the undefinable spirit. And one of the abstractions found in the Toltec way is that spirits make itself known as with omens. The rule itself manifests from spirit. Another abstraction is that you can communicate with spirit, and through internal nonverbal dialogue and through omens, you may enter into dialogue with spirit. And accordingly, the rule offers guidance for participating with the spirit. And the power of silence, Castaneda, presents other abstract cores. All right. Now, I must admit that, excuse me, 1 second here. So we discussed the rule. Which is what the Toltecs followed. And now we discuss the sexes. Donner states that male and females relate to reasons differently. These differences, as she says, make females more flexible. Don Juan says that while men possess sobriety and purpose, females have the talent. He adds that due to their nature, women have a marked edge over men in the general pursuit of knowledge. This kind of thinking blows most 20th century models out the window, but it is also interesting that this division of labor is consistent with archetypes of masculine and feminine energies. Masculine energy is thought to provide directions and thrust. Feminine energy is often considered open, pliable, and nurturing. It is also important to note that males and females are generally regarded as having both masculine and feminine energies. Donner extends Don Juan's thinking about women by saying that our survival as a species depends on giving women time to evolve. rather than align with procreation, she feels women need to align with evolution. But using the womb, a dreaming organ, she says that the dream of another intent, another reality, may be latched onto and expressed. One effect would be leading the entire species in another direction, from which women would give birth to another species. This is not leadership in the traditional sense. It is leadership in radical transformation. There is no question that in recent history male perspectives have ruled. We have few monuments to women. We have relatively few female political representatives. Thus, it's obvious that our social society has refused to recognize the validity of their views and their power. Now, however, women have had their fill and seek to claim their freedom. There is even a growing discourse on patriarchal versus matriarchal societies. Quite often I hear that patriarchal societies are contriving, power-dominated, and subversive of human rights. Matriarchal societies, on the other hand, are viewed as embracing, nurturing, and protective of the highest ideals. I believe that's probably true. A concurrent theme is that patriarchal societies, hence men and in general, don't have the comprehensive view women do. Men are deemed to harbor natural limitations. This view often becomes implicit, not needing expression, and therefore the flip side of a drive for domination surfaces. This time by women who exhibit the attitude arbitrarily and systematically demean men. By so doing, women commit the very grievance they wish to correct. For instance, I remember a kitchen table conversation with friends where one woman spoke endearingly of her affiliation with the sisterhood. This connection provided strength and helped her focus her resolve toward liberation. One of the men spoke of how he felt the same way toward men. He sought to encourage their evolution and their empowerment. He spoke of men capitalizing on the women's liberation movement in order to better free themselves. The woman said it was too bad. He just couldn't see people as people and not as sexes. So while it was fine to espouse virtues of sisterhood, like-minded male activity was seen as boys being boys. And her remark does carry great meaning. However, for a time, men were considered by many as superior, the breadwinners. Now, a growing number say women are superior and the saviors. Perhaps the pendulum needs to swing in the opposite direction to generate more awareness and balance. Perhaps humans simply seek to dominate. Perhaps, however, we can even step beyond patriarchal and matriarchal concerns. Perhaps if we find a common ground of equality, we can move on to a higher ground. And as Don Juan says, the fact that we all face death makes us all equal, leaving us no time for anything else. Unless his advice as a guide, perhaps, or using his advice as a guide, perhaps we can elevate ourselves beyond the so-called battle of the sexes and into the rhythm of universal consciousness, where the drama of masculine and feminine energies is but a stage play.
I like that idea a lot, but unfortunately, you can't get past the sexual aspect of it as much as you try. There's always the the sexual attraction when dealing with both men and women. If you're heterosexual, men and women are attracted to each other in sexual ways, and you can't bypass that biological element. I've never been able to, and it doesn't make me a sexist, it just makes me one who's aware of the sexual emotion, if you will, that is involved in all communications. It is. You can't help it. I mean, you're a sexual being. You're going to mirror a sexual attitude. It's just part of you, whether you're male or female, right? And that sexual attitude creates your tolerances and intolerances. It creates your different many different aspects of your of the means of communication. You can't deny the sexual attraction of an individual if they have it, or the non-sexual attraction of an individual if they don't have it. Those people who are sexual in their appearance or their nature, they are usually more energetic, they're more flirtatious, they're more communicative, they're more flamboyant, they're more exuberant, and it's because they are charged sexually. They are more charged sexually, and that's male or female. You know, I mean, if a woman is sexually appealing, regardless of her age, that's because of her sexuality is more enhanced within her. It's not her fault. There's no reason to be at fault. It's simply a gift of youth, or a gift of energy or vitality or whatever that will many times lead to a longer, healthier, more vital life, more interesting life, possibly. But it also there are also aspects of the sexual energies that can be, unless they're transmuted into productive energy, productive actions, or productive means, then what happens is they can become destructive, they can become perverted, they can become diverted, and create a great a very negative energy as opposed to a positive energy, depending on how you direct it in your own mind, how you try to filter those energies. So, in that, I've never been able to seem to expand across that great divide in a spiritual sense. As many times as I've tried, I always have to come back to the physical. And even if I'm having an out-of-body experience or floating around in a fourth-dimensional haze, you still have that sexual intensity within you that links you to the third dimension. All right. So, be it as it may, I find it very difficult myself personally to be able to expand my consciousness beyond that sexual divide. And I always become conscious of the sexuality of an individual, or especially a female. And you also are aware of that, the sexuality of a male, and that the how they can use that drive to become more determined, more forceful, more whatever they are, or to, you know, exude a form of charisma and sex appeal. And you have that with rock stars, you have that with politicians, you have that with strippers, and I mean every kind of entertainment profession or public individual in public arena. So So let me stop there, and I'm going to go on to the next segment. The next segment is called The Four Directions. The rule divides individuals into four groups of directions: north, east, south, and west. The directions reflect a natural balance or orienting oneself on a path. Furthermore, each direction embodies a particular intent. Arguments of male or female superiority aside, a defining Toltec view is that women carry within them the intent of the directions. By their nature, women are therefore connected with intent, whereas men must learn to make the connection. It is this difference that led Don Juan to give women an edge in pursuing knowledge. The following categories reflect forms of energy. The idea here is not to define types of behavior as much as it is to direct awareness into another frame of reference. North. This direction concerns itself with knowledge. A person from this direction seeks and gains highly specific knowledge in a particular area of inquiry. It is the intent of the scholar. While vital to almost any endeavor, northern inhabitants often carry an aloof, domineering arrogance. Resting too comfortably within their domain, they are easily blinded to the unknown and thus run into trouble with a reluctance to continually break the boundaries of their current knowledge. And I mentioned this before, we become, men or women become too involved and too engrossed in our own sense of knowledge, to the sense of being omnipotent, you know, which is a dream that all people have. Be godlike. East is an optimism and humor bubble forth from this intent. Often having gentle dispositions, people of this orientation are perfect messengers and scouts. Although a little fickle, they efficiently scout the road in front of you, making sure you don't run into something you'd rather avoid. As east-oriented persons usually require direction from without, they need instigation, but once in motion, are more than up to the task. South. A very nurturing, soothing direction, as though sealed in a protective cocoon. This person's energy body automatically produces a sheen which shields them from the seeing of others. It is harder to see into them and their motives than it is to see into the other directions. This makes them suitable for behind-the-scenes work. For example, this person enjoys the control derived from getting a political aspirant into office rather than personally seeking the office. West. Power. Those centered within this direction are prone to action, doing instead of talking. They possess a very aggressive demeanor. Their raw energy provides fuel for propulsion into almost any endeavor. However, they also tend to be volatile, boisterous, and contemptuous. The natural power lurking within continually challenges their sense of balance with the other directions. I have a tendency to feel that I may be there. That may be me. An unbalanced power, if you will. I'm somewhere between the north and the west. Maybe northwest, which is why I probably live in the northwest, northwestern Connecticut. It suits my Toltec direction. There's a diagram here of the different male and female traits, and goes on. But I'm going to skip over that for a minute. I'm going to jump into leadership. Toltec leadership consists of implementing radical change. It requires continual development of energy, coupled with continual refinement of context, or the terms that guide how energy is handled. Doing so takes years of arduous personal commitment and teamwork. In terms of challenging ordinary reality, all Toltecs are leaders. For a team, since the team leaders carry the rule through their behavior, they convey a working model of that vision to each member. And they require extra fortitude to withstand the disparities in individual members usually try to pull the team in various directions. As Donner states, to carry out this task, team leaders receive extraordinary conditioning during their apprenticeships. The leaders do, however, rely on the energetic influences of the team. But it is almost impossible to say how the leader will be influenced. Although a member thinks he or she is providing a particular kind of influence, it might turn out to have an unanticipated effect on the leader. For example, a West-oriented female and a man of action are walking together in a suburban section of his hometown. As they pass a tree, they felt their energy shift and their focal points move. Both felt extreme fright and terror. They left the immediate area, regrouping their energies, and returned to the tree. They experienced the same shift, the same terror. They concluded that the energy of the tree produced those effects. And adhering to their responsibilities, they told the story to the team members, including a team leader. The leader regarded the report as valuable and was intrigued that the tree might be used to shift the focal point. As part of his training, however, the leader compelled to verify their report. He located the tree through dreaming. While he experienced a shift in his energy, he did not experience any negative reaction. And over time, he saw that both people had rigid energy fields. He concluded that their interpretation that the tree produced a terror was inaccurate. He found that their terror resulted from their fears of losing control, and in this case, reluctance to let their focal points shift freely into the unknown. To further illustrate, a friend told me that he often felt extreme terror when he was by himself at night and in the midst of trees. He says that he outgrew the terror, however, by placing his experiences in the context of focal points, shifts, and then examining his fear. He also makes it a point to spend time among trees, and he no longer suffers deleterious reactions. It's interesting that forests can be quite frightening, especially at night. You know, there's so much energy, solid energy, given from that tree, a tree or a number of trees, that you, if anybody's been outdoors at night, in the woods or surrounded by trees, they immediately sense the power of those and the energy given off by those trees, creating a frightening tower in front of you, or a large wall of trees, and as the wind blows, you see and what I've done in cases like this where it's so easy to be terrified of nothing, basically. You're not terrified, you're terrified of this or that, or what if you get a bear, or you get this, you know, it's not, the likelihood of that happening is slim to none. And, you know, many people have survived many days in the woods alone without, you know. But those that have because they have had great faith, not only in themselves, but in God, and in
and in the and in the their understanding that the mind creates all things. So the mind creates its fear or its calm. Man can be in total control of the night, or he can be in total fear of it. And it's all in his own mind. And I believe that what we're leading into here is basically that. You know, you, the leader of this group, or any group, is one who has no fear, you know. Essentially, has great faith and no fear, or very little fear, and walks through walls, you know, walks through fire, and leads his people onward through example. And I've met a number of people like that. Not many. I haven't met too many people like that, great leaders, but I have met some that are strong and determined individuals that I've admired. And some I have followed to the degree that a student follows a teacher to learn. But as in all ways that I've noticed, that everybody falls short. Everyone. Even Christ fell short to his followers. Because there's a point in time where the student must equal or even exceed the knowledge of the master. And that's not, doesn't seem possible, but it is. It is possible, because I've seen this time and time again in my own life, where teachers teach you, and then you go on and you learn, or they teach you a method that you can go on and learn, wow, this method is wrong. Or you say, wow, this method is right, and it takes you to a higher method. I'm always delighted when I have a teacher who can guide me to the right path. And it can guide you even by the simple by simple guidance, or like a case in the case of George Dixon, who I consider my teacher in many things, led me to these books, and not deliberately either. He just opened up his library to me, and through my own whatever interested me, I was able to find and take and read and follow through, and in some cases do a program on, or several programs on. But, and I've been able to teach others, or at least introduce people to the, not teach them, at least introduce them to another form of thought, another aspect of ascension consciousness, or another path to higher consciousness, or that I believe is. And sometimes I can see the validity in them, but yet then I lose interest, or I get confused myself, and or in some cases possibly I even get bored. And boredom is a very real thing for me. I can get very bored on certain topics. I can be very bored on certain issues. You can talk things to death. And once you know the truth of something,
you put it in your encyclopedia and move on, you know. And so your encyclopedia of knowledge, which in my case is my mind, my brain, my notebooks. But others have that as well. I mean, you know, I'm not unique in any way. So what I'm getting at is that regardless of how you interpret something or how something is interpreted to you, doesn't necessarily mean that it's proper, that it's correct. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's the end of all, especially in metaphysics and spirituality. There is no end to this stuff. I mean, you can go on and on and on, but and find other methods and other ways to enlightenment. There's not just one, you know. It's not like the Catholic or Protestant or the Christ or the Buddha or the Krishna or, you know, the Toltec path or any of these. But it's any of these or all of these. There are wisdom in all of these philosophies and religions that have guided people to a heightened reality, to a heightened awareness. And there are others that have deluded people into a diminished awareness, into a censored reality that people can't see out of. And those are rather dangerous. And that's what the Toltec way says, is that you can't become too ingrained in the second cycle, which is your, you know, capturing of your own personal power, you know, believing in your own superiority and your own genius, if you will. It's something that I could never believe in, because I've always found so many people with so many great ideas, so far greater than my own, and greater than my own capacity to understand them. So rather than to censor that information, or to be ignore that information, I've tried to accept it. But if I don't understand it myself, then I present it and move on, and explain to my listeners, or accept myself, that this is something that I cannot go further on because I don't understand it really. It's either ignorant to me, ignorant of it, or it seems rather very ignorant in its methodology to me, you know, or too censored, too narrow-minded, and that often is the case. But also, there are other things like, you know, that aspects that I can't fathom because my mind doesn't work in that direction. Principles of mathematics that are simple to others, have a tendency to be beyond my ability to comprehend. And possibly I could comprehend, but again, I get bored very easily. So unless the topic fascinates me or it has some anchor, I can anchor the topic in my own existence, my own reality, and see the purpose to it, that I lose sight and can no longer comprehend. Sometimes things will fascinate you simply by their own shine, if you will, or their own mystery. Everything seems to hold its own mystery, even from a watch to a cardboard box, you know. Everything has its own mystery and its design. This designer had some idea and some use and purpose for whatever it was that you designed. The book, for instance, a book to me is a brilliant design, a brilliant concept, you know, and a brilliant way to contain thought, you know, and I'm very, very proud that I was able to write a book and contain my thoughts in writing and put them in a book, an attractive book, and a 365-page book, so that I can share it with others, and they can understand my methodology, my mind, you know, and I find that important for people, especially for people who are trying to say, well, where's this guy coming from? And that's something that I would personally ask whenever I'm listening to a talk show or a television show or reading a book, somebody's book. Where does this person come from? How is he orienting his information to his personal life? And is he saying anything to me that I should actually read? Or is this a waste of time? And since I've read thousands upon thousands of books over my life, I've learned to respect the written word and respect books and those who write them. To the extent that their writing is worth respect. Not everyone. I mean, a few scribbles on a page doesn't equate to a valuable thought, you know, or a comprehensive thought. Just as a few lines on a canvas doesn't really equate to art. It's more of a expression of some sort that somebody wants to convey. But is it truly an art form, or is it truly a work of meritorious value? No, not necessarily. Just the same as books, you know. But you hope every writer who puts one out there that has put a lot of time, effort, and research into hopes that, you know, it'll be treated with the respect that you yourself gave it the information, and it usually is. It usually is. Work. A person's work usually always finds its level. I see that I have a caller here. I don't know who that is, but I'd be happy to get him on the air. Hello, caller. Could I like to join the show?
Hello. Sure would.
Yeah, who am I talking to?
My name is Alex.
Alan, how are you?
Very good. How are you?
Thanks for joining us. What can I
Thank
do for you?
I have something to share with you as far as the esoteric wisdom goes.
Sure.
It's called Affinity. And it goes like this. As I begin to read, your petals open to accept. Through your crown portal, the symbols which my soul verbalizes. This passes down through your being, from those glistening eyes, then inhaled through the chambers, lodging themselves within the centers of your sensitized knowingness. A place of sanctuary, as sacred as a virgin forest. You attach to the accents of wispy reverberations, to a radiance that encompasses with its passion. Your body aligns to these fluctuations. You embed their very sounds, remembering with a sweet adeptness. You gravitate towards as if you were a butterfly, floating upon the contours of a transcendental wind. You yearn for this vibrant tongue to place within your inner canals, to absorb its sensual emanations, saturating your deepest desires. You wish to listen to these timeless pieces, where two can exist within their cosmic capsule. You learn things about yourself, only now come to the forefront. You walk in the forest feeling one with an inner glow. You begin to know a happiness, why a twinkle sparkles, such that a star in the night sky with you affirms its affinity.
Oh, wow. That was very nice. Who wrote that?
I did.
Oh, you did? Very, very.
Yes.
Is that in a book, or is that an essay, or what?
No, it's a poem I wrote about in the last week or so.
Is it on a website or something, or did you just...
I don't have it on a website yet.
Oh, great. Well, that was very good. It was very
Thank
good.
You.
You should put that up somewhere.
I submit a lot of them all over. It's just I have so many that it's hard to get them all out there, I guess. So.
Well, you definitely got a talent. That's very good.
Thank you.
Are most of your poems metaphysical in that way, or are they?
Yes, they are. I'm especially in the last few years because I'm a Reiki master teacher. So.
Ah, okay. What got you into? Did you start? Are these semi-channeled, or are they?
I think they're almost totally channeled. That I'm just acting more like a conduit, like I am with the energy, and
sounded somewhat from a hierarchy. I'm not sure what, but it had a familiar ring to it. excuse me. I have my window open. It's 85 degrees in here.
And, oh my goodness!
And I have this in a tremendous amount of pollen. So I have a large garden in the back and trees and so on. And it tends to every so often I get a gust of a breeze into the room and it loaded with pollen. So, but I wanted to thank you for that. It sounds like you reached some center core of understanding there. Either within yourself or through some open door to affinity, you know.
It's a gift, and I just develop it, and I listen to my spirit guides, and I sit very quietly when I'm writing, and they endow me with their wisdom.
They're remarkably generous, aren't they? And they can come across in so many different voices. Do you have a specific guide, or do you have several?
No, several.
You have several.
I think one of my most dominating would probably be my ancestor, who was a French novelist in France in the 1800s, and she took the pen name of a man to escape being labeled a woman back then, and her name was George Sand.
Oh, yeah, she's a relative of yours?
She's a relative of mine, yeah.
Oh, wow. Direct mm-hmm. descent, or like...
By direct descent, yeah.
Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. That's great. So, do you recognize her voice, or do you? I mean, do you?
No, I just I've been to her chateau in France and that, and I recognize her presence. So.
Oh, well, that's remarkable. No, I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that at all from him. You, whatever you have there, you seem to have a sophisticated style. So I wouldn't doubt that was that might be true. You know. I never know where my stuff comes from. Sometimes I used to think it came from me, you know, and
mm-hmm.
My writing, and yet.
But that's the ego talking, and one.
Of course it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like one of the most profound moments I can remember was when I completed I had completed several, three or four different works within a matter of a couple of days. And I was saying, crying out loud, and I was reading them over, and I was saying, no, that's not too bad. That's not bad at all, you know. And I was saying, all right, you know, I'd go out and have a drink, you know. I suddenly got this voice out of nowhere that suddenly said to me, you know, so you think you can write, you know. You think you can write? And I laughed and I said, what? Where did this come from? And it made me realize how, and it humbled me, because I realized that it wasn't, you know, that this, whatever it was, inspiration that I got, I got through whatever, a higher being, you know, it was inspired that way. But your ego always wants to take on that, you know, take on that crown if it can.
If it can, yes.
What's that?
If it can, yes, of course.
If it can, yeah. But I remember this happened to me quite a number of years ago, and I never forgot it, because the voice was so profoundly loud in my mind, in my head, that it's just out of nowhere. Said, "Do you think you can write?" You know, and how do you think? And it made me laugh, because I thought of anything above my dimension would have to write far better than I do. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So it humbled me, and it kept me humble probably for the last 15 years. You know, and in the sense that I don't take credit for anything I write anymore. You know, it just comes, and whatever inspiration it is that put it there, you know. I give it all the credit for it. So, yeah, definitely. You seem to have isolated some a voice, which is great, you know. And I highly suggest you put it up there somewhere, you know, get it out there or collect them and try to get them published.
Oh, I appreciate that. I have a number of them out there. It's just difficult to get every single one because I write so much. So.
Well, get yourself, you know, do you have a website yourself?
I'm on a writer's website out of Los Angeles, actually.
Yeah, why don't you get yourself a Google blog? Get yourself a blog. It costs nothing. You get your domain free, and you can set it up yourself. It's very simple to set up. And, you know, you start writing, just put your stuff on there, I guarantee. You know, you get people to, you know, to go to it. And anytime you publish one. And, you know, make note of it on a Facebook or on a Twitter or someplace. And, you know, so people can know where it is and go to it and hear your work. Because today, I mean, I've had a website up for, I don't know, since 2003. And, you know, I've got probably 500-600 different works on there on the lasteelshow.org website.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was able to collect all those, plus add much more to a collection and put them in a book, and I highly recommend that you do that, because it sounds like your work should be heard by many, not just by myself.
You know what? I read on a lot of different Blog Talk Radio programs, and I'm published on a number of different sites, but it's really been increasing in the last 6 months, of course. But
why don't you start your own show?
No, you try to balance work and family and working out and...
Even if it's once a week, excuse me, or even once a month, you know, to do that show and hook it up to a blog, and you find yourself being able to read your own stuff, and people come and will come to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
I would definitely tune it in. You know, I think you get some talent there.
Well, I appreciate that.
I should definitely promote it. Where do you live?
In Canada.
Canada? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm Canadian myself, so, yeah, I appreciate it up there. Whereabouts?
We're on the border with northern Michigan and northern Ontario.
Oh, okay. Way up there. Well, I appreciate you coming. You're talking to me tonight. And have you listened to the show before, or...?
I just came across it tonight, so it was very nice to actually see that, and I felt drawn to it, so I thought I'd call. So,
are you familiar with Castaneda or any of the Toltec work?
You know what? I've read different certain books, and I've read a couple of smaller ones on the Toltecs and stuff like that. In actuality, it's a really cool romantic thing, but my wife is actually from Mexico.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, and we were drawn. I was drawn to one of the Mayan sites called Palenque.
Right.
And it is supposed to be the most important Mayan site as far as the end of the Mayan calendar goes and everything like that. So it's a very I'm very in tune with the energies of Mexico and with the Mayan philosophy, and it was really cool. I was in one Mayan site. It was called Cabá, just north of Mérida, and the one tour guide was handling questions from different people, and the lady beside me, she asked him, well, what's that person right beside the king and the queen, because there were stone statues in this building. And the guide went and said, well, that's their shaman, and they use the shaman back then in order to help keep them healthy by utilizing cleansing of their chakras and everything. And I said, well, here you go. I named all the chakras for him, and I named all the color codes and their different purposes and stuff like that, and he wouldn't leave me alone after that. So.
Oh, wow. No, I think, you know, you'd be interested in our Friday night show. On Friday nights, I have a gentleman named George Dixon, who's a researcher. He's been researching esoteric schools for the last, last 35 years.
Oh, okay.
Brilliant guy, a good friend of mine, and he and we've done about 75 programs now on Blog Talk regarding the Mayan calendar and 2012 polar shift, and we'll be discussing that tomorrow night. But we'll also be involved going into the Hopi prophecies tomorrow as well, and comparing them. You might want to join us eight to nine o'clock. We'd enjoy having your input.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, please join us. That's tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, 8 to 9. And being a having been there, well, I haven't been there myself. I haven't been to the Mayan ruins, but I've discussed them and seen them, and been involved with the prophecy for quite some time now, but definitely please join us. I think you could add a lot to the conversation.
That would be really awesome. If I'm available, I'll definitely call you up.
If not, catch it on the archives, let me know what you think. All right.
I sure will.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. And the show's already stopped streaming, so it's just you and I right now. But I want to thank you for joining me.
Okay, thank you, and have a great night.
You too. Good night.
Okay, good night.
All right. I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight, and I hope that you enjoyed the show. And please join us tomorrow night, which is Friday night. For some reason, looks like I have... no longer connected here. But anyway, if I am, I want to thank everybody for joining us. Join us tomorrow night for our discussion with George and Lila. Thanks, and good night.